You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, the show of all sorts that sorts all by serving up a slice of life. What is your order? Ah, I see. The special it is. We'll be there to deliver ASAP. Special delivery.
Hello and welcome to your special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. My name is Dan, and with me today, as always, is...
Oh no, who's... Oh, come on. I have to consult you the book now. It's me, isn't it?
You know I'm last because it's alphabetical. Come on.
Yeah, but I'm sometimes last when it's you and Dan's doing it, and I'm Dan... Oh, duh.
We are professionals, Dave.
We are, as you can tell.
I swear, I mean, honestly, we really are.
18 episodes in, and we're like a oiled machine. Well-oiled machine. Well, I'm well-oiled.
There's lots of oil, but not necessarily a machine. Right, okay.
That's okay. I'm editing this, so it doesn't matter. So here we go.
Let's go for it.
Paul from the UK.
Sean from Canada.
And we are here to serve you a slice of life in every show. And today's episode is a return to our lovely format of the Desert Island DVDs. Now, we've got a very special guest with us today. He is a lightsaber dueling geek of quite renown who I met a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, basically our school days. And yes, Paul is showing off his hoodie, the Force Awakens hoodie. There may be some Star Wars discussion coming up as well in this little movie selection. But Dave, first of all, introduce yourselves to our listeners. Who are you?
Hi guys, my name's Dave Martin. I have, as Dan said, known each other since secondary school days a long time ago. Thought I'd get in touch today to give you guys my top 10 film list countdown.
It's excellent. It's a really good list. I have seen every single one. So unlike our last one, where I was a bit lost and I hadn't seen a few films, this one I can at least say at least a few words about each one. Before we move on, I wasn't just joking about the lightsaber dueling. Obviously, you have your professional side, but there is something you like to do in your spare time. Would you like to go into that a little bit more?
Yeah. So a couple of years back, me and good friend Phil Russell, Dan, you know him well. we went to MCM Comic Con up in the Excel Center and had a great time. And we took the kids, and they had a lightsaber dueling class there that you could have a go at. It was run by a group called Silver Sabers, who were based in London. And the kids joined in and had a really good time. And me and Phil kind of got quite hooked on it. And we looked up, unfortunately, Silver Sabers were based in London, so we couldn't really go to them. But we've since found a local guy. So we've been going to a saber club in the local area for 2 years and learning how to fight with lightsabers. Obviously, they're not the real ones, so we don't have to worry about lost limbs and things like that. But they are essentially the same hilts. They're polycarbonate blades that are about an inch thick, and they have LEDs inside, so they light up, they clash, they make all the sounds. We have proper fights with them. The club is quite a martial arts style. It's run in a sort of martial arts style. Like it's considered a temple. It has a basis in things like Taekwondo and ninjutsu and things like that. Sensei is a black belt, I believe, in ninjutsu and karate, and has done things like that, but is also a huge Star Wars fan. So it's all very much basis, you know, the styles they've developed. There are several styles that we're learning, we're progressing through, are all have a sort of basis in the real world, in proper martial arts fighting, and even to a certain point now where they're developing a new one that is more, I would say, like medieval, more European sword fighting that you would get over in Europe. So it's good fun. You get the odd bruise, and you know, some people wear some helmets because there hasn't been any concussions, but there's been several bruised heads and, you know, wax on the face and things like that. So, but it's all in good fun. We all have a good laugh, and we're all getting pretty good at it. Even things like spinning, which is obviously, you know, like you see the Jedi doing in real life, we're all getting pretty good at it. So
that's incredible. I've seen the videos and the training things on Facebook and things like that, and just seeing them flying around, and you guys just go straight for it. It's not like, you know, it's not like a little bit, you know, edging towards the opponent just hoping you don't hurt each other, but you really go for it.
Yeah, it is. And it's the, you know, when we first started, we were obviously all a little bit nervous, but I've been going, obviously not last year, but now it'll be about 3 years we've been going for, so we're all getting pretty good. We're going up the grades. You start off with a fairly basic two-handed style, you know, a nice controlled style that's mainly about defense, because you kind of have to learn that first, and then we're slowly going on to more offensive styles. So the next style up is, you know, a one-handed style combat that's more about attack all the time. So yeah, once you get to know the group and you get to know how good people are, you can, there are some fights that where people really do go for it, and then when you add in the spinning and stuff like that, it then does look really good. Some of the fights they have look really impressive, and it's, I think it's becoming very popular. Like the guy who runs the group last year, well obviously not last year, 2019, went to a tournament in France and competed in a tournament in France where people from all over the world came. And it was dominated by a guy who has been doing it for like 12 years and trains like 4 hours a day. He was absolutely superb. But it was, I think it's getting more and more, you know, mainstream now, as the, you know, as Disney have done with Star Wars and made it more mainstream. It's certainly becoming more and more popular, and it's really good fun. Like even as a workout, 2 hours of running around, smacking the crap out of everyone. Certainly gets your sweat dripping, so it's very good. I'd invite you all guys to come along. Maybe Sean, it's a bit far for Sean to come, but I'm sure there's somewhere in Canada where you guys can, you know, beat each other with lightsabers.
Well, I have been planning on making a trip to the UK for about 5 years now, so this just might be the clincher for me.
Oh well, there we go. Yeah. Come and visit Dan, and then you guys can come down on a Wednesday night. It's luckily it's held in my village now in Cliff, which is perfect. It's just down the road, but yeah, we've you know, come down and take out all your frustrations on Dan.
That sounds like a good idea and a lot of fun.
Do you need your own lightsaber, or do you provide them?
They do provide them there. Kenny, the guy who runs it, has a few stunt sabers that are mainly just light up, don't have sounds. But as the guys progress, you kind of want to get your own one. You know, there's so much customization out there now with groups online where they customize the hilt however you want it. So I got mine from a place based in Wales in Swansea called JQ Sabers that are on the net. And they can be quite expensive because they have to be pretty solid. I think mine was kind of a birthday present, and it was about £200. But it's really solid. It's got a nice black hilt. If you guys like, do you want me to go and grab it? Because I know where it is.
That's great for an audio podcast.
I'll get a screenshot, oh, and then I'll save it and put it on the thing.
So here we go, guys. I've got two of them because one of them is a bit more. Can take a bit more punishment. It's not quite as good, but this is my main one that I use for dueling here. And they're pretty good. I don't know if you can hear it. It's got a Jedi sound chip. So they are, and every time you hit them, obviously you get the sounds, and they flash on clash. So they're all interchangeable with all the colors changed. I think it has like 15 different colors you can pick from and all that. And then this one is
very nice.
This one has a Sith chip in it, so it's a little bit more angry. Hang on. But yeah, it's blue at the moment.
Very
so
nice.
Yeah, they will do the hum and the swing and all that, and the battery's running out, that one.
Every Jedi has that problem.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how sturdy are these things? I mean, if you're whacking the heck out of each other with them, I mean, they can take a hit to another lightsaber, I assume. But
They're pretty strong. I mean, they're flexible blades. They have a bit of flex in them as well. But they're pretty powerful. Like to whack them into one another. Like this one's got quite a lot of marks on it from other blades where you hit it against other blades and stuff. But we haven't had any tube snap. Well, no, correction. We've had one tube snap so far, which is not bad. We've got a group of about 12 people, and one of them snapped at the base where it was just a particularly. I think it was quite an old saber and it just gave up the ghost. But they are. Other than that, we haven't had any shatter or smash or anything like that. So you can really go for it. You really can. I mean, obviously, a lot of the training, the emphasis is more on control. So we kind of say contact, not impact, a lot of the time. But if you want to go for it, some of the fights are. They look vicious. You know, people do really go for it. So it's certainly good fun.
I need one.
Well, I need one just so I don't have to make all the noises. I mean, when you're 13 or 14, you can make the noises, no problem. But as you get older, you just can't do the noises anymore. Your lips don't work.
Yeah. No, that's it, yeah. And it's nice that they do, like, the hum and the swing. And then some of them now have the chips, have, like, motion chips in. So depending on how hard you swing the lightsaber is how hard you get a hum back. So you can do really gentle ones. And then when you speed up, they get quicker and faster. And all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I've even got Phil, our friend Phil has one where he can push a button on his that simulates a blaster hitting the lightsaber. So it makes the noise as if you're deflecting lightsaber blasts, which is fantastic. And he does that all the time in combat. So
you see, Sean, that's what that shelf behind you is missing, is a lightsaber just lying along the top of it, you know, like a Harry Potter wand.
Yeah, you're not Harry Potter, never any of that stuff, but it looks like it'd be perfect for a lightsaber or two. I've got four shelves there that are empty, so
that's it. I've seen they released the Darksaber now, haven't they, from The Mandalorian, so that could be one for your shelf. So there you go.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's sold out, unfortunately, but it'll be back.
It doesn't come in bits and you know, you get it in monthly in a magazine, does it? If it does, Sean's right there.
Yeah.
Build your own lightsaber for 99 cents.
Yeah, let's not talk about Eagle Moss anymore.
Well, on that note of things getting lost whilst travelling, let's get started. Okay, we've got our Desert Island DVDs. It's a list of 10 movies. If you were stuck on a desert island and you had only a solar panel, a DVD player and a TV, just by complete coincidence, and you'd packed your 10 favourite DVDs, what would you take? Now, Dave has kindly sent us our list, and we're going to start at number 10. Are these in any particular order, or it was just your top 10 list?
I wouldn't say they're in any particular order. I would say the one at the top of the list is probably number one. If pushed, would be number one. But I'd say the other than that, it's so hard to condense your films down into just a 10. There are so many. But I'd say this is not in any particular order. But if you know, if I was on that island, this is what I'd want to watch again and again and again.
So. Yeah, it's hard. I mean, week to week, that list could change. This one does have a very recent addition, so obviously that's pushed out a previous film from the list, hasn't it?
Yes, yeah. I mean, before that one, I think Bill and Ted, I was so close to putting on Bill and Ted's Excellent Journey, Excellent Adventure, wasn't it? Sorry. And I watched that the other day for the first time with my 7-year-old Jack, and I said, I think you'll like this film, Jack, and he absolutely loved it, and I've got a t-shirt of it, and it's a great film. It's really fun, you know, nice Sunday afternoon film to stick on. So yeah, I think that would have made the cut if it hadn't been for the more recent one. So honorable mention,
which is our number 10. Honorable mention.
So number 10 on my list is going to be the Lego Movie.
Crank up those subwoofers, dude, and check this out.
Which was released in 2014. I didn't see it at the cinema, but again, the plus side of having kids now is you get to watch these sort of films with a legitimate reason. And bought it on Blu-ray the second it came out and absolutely loved it. I think it is quite possibly one of the funniest animated films ever, possibly one of the funniest children's films ever. A lot of people said to me when I wrote the list, especially my wife Louise, said, how come it's not Lego Batman? And I think Lego Batman potentially is funnier, or very closely, but the Lego movie has the better story, the better plot, I believe. I think it was very clever. There hadn't been anything like it, not that I could think of, that had been released before it. The cast is absolutely fantastic. I mean, Chris Pratt was getting there, but he wasn't that well known when he did this film. You know, Liam Neeson is in it, Nick Offerman from Parks and Recs, which I don't know if you guys love. Morgan Freeman is Vitruvius. It slays me every time. The stuff they get him to say in that film is just brilliant, you know? Like, the fact that when he calls Dumbledore, Doubledore, you know, and they have that whole back and forth about him being Doubledore. No, I thought you said Dumbledore. So, and it's just brilliant. It's a clever film, very funny. I feel like out of all of it, Liam Neeson's probably my favourite as bad cop and good cop. It's a nice spin on the good cop, bad cop thing. You know, Will Ferrell as Lord Business is absolutely fantastic. And the first time I watched it, I felt that it was going along really nicely. I really enjoyed the script and the plot. But then when Emmett falls down the tube, he falls out of the Octon Tower and falls, and he lands on the floor in the real world, that was just, that was so clever and such a great way that the whole film and everything that's been happening has just been, you know, in this kid's mind. And you think, I remember playing like that as a kid. You know, I remember making up these wild stories and building such random things with Lego. And I can see it from both sides now, because as well, again, the other upside of having kids is I've got a lot of Lego in this house. But I love the Lego now being just what the Lego is. Follow the instructions. Don't deviate. If they take something apart, my youngest one is forever taking the heads off Lego people and swapping them around. And it drives me insane. And so they've got their sets they're allowed to play with, and very much like Lord Business, the dad, I have my sets that aren't to be touched. You know, I've got like the Raptor encounter from Jurassic Park. Louise got me for Father's Day, which is on my shelf. I've got Iron Man's Hall of Armor in Lego that's on my shelf that's not allowed to be touched. And I catch them sometimes in the morning moving things around, and I have to tell them off. So that whole thing with the dad in the basement being, you know, the big boss, the big president who likes everything just how it is, I think really resonated with me. It was very clever. Very clever film. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. That whole twist at the end where it was then taken into the real world, and you kind of then appreciated that this was going to be a family movie, that it does appeal to that adult base as well as the child who likes to play with the Lego, that all of the weird craziness is just the child's imagination. And then you get the real reason why Lord Business acts the way he does is that it's his dad, and it's his dad in his own imagination and the way he sees him. It did make me think of your Christmas present, actually, when you picked this movie. Do you want to elaborate on what that
yes,
was?
Yes, yeah. So for Christmas, we said we weren't going to do presents, me and Louise. It's been a tough year, and we were like, oh, we won't do presents, we'll just do it for the kids. But I have been on and on and on about the Lego Blockade Runner for years, since it had been released. So the big Tantive IV from Star Wars A New Hope. It was released twice before, and every time it had come out, I thought, oh, that's a really nice set, but it's really expensive. And then by the time I got around to buying it, Lego had stopped doing it. Traditionally, I don't know if you guys are aware, Lego only run a product for about 3 years or so, and then it goes off the market, and they don't make it anymore. And the market for secondhand Lego in a box is extortionate. It's one of the best investments you guys can have. It really is. So this came out again, and now being the age I am and having a bit of disposable income, I was like, oh, that'd be really nice. But I didn't buy it, and Louise luckily got it for me for Christmas, because it has now just been discontinued again. So I got it right on the cutoff. So it's like a Lego creator set, and it's huge. It's like 13 bags. Took me about 2 weeks to build. And that, again, is, you know, the kids were like, oh, can we touch it? Can we play with it? I was like, no, It's for looking at. It goes on a display shelf. It's for looking at. That's it. So, you know,
I'm looking at one now online, and it looks amazing. Absolutely amazing.
It is, and it's all
the price. But yeah.
yeah, it's going up already. It's crazy.
There's a used one on eBay for £400.
Wow. This is the thing. I've been told with Lego sets now that if you buy one, you buy two. You buy one, you get it out, you build it, you keep another one in the box, and you put it in the loft and don't touch it. Because some of them are just, you know, like the Ghostbusters house that was out a few years ago is now going for like £500 to £600 online. It's crazy money. I don't know if anyone actually buys them. Maybe that's just the price they set and they never sell it. But it's worth a try at least. Mm.
So my wife bought the Lego Harry Potter castle.
Oh, wow.
Bought it rather for her. But then I spent another little bit of extra money and bought the lighting kit so it all lights up on the inside. Now, there's no way we're going to sell that now because when you wire that thing up, it looks amazing. It's really good. But that was a good few weeks build, that was.
That's it. And I think it's, you know, my wife suffers from quite a bit of anxiety and things like that a lot of the time. And she uses, especially when the kids get Lego sets, you know, if they get a bit bored, bin it, she take over almost as like a calming effect. You know, you can focus on one thing. You don't have to think about anything else. And I think it's used quite a bit in other aspects, you know, for like kids with anxiety. They get them to have therapy while they're building Lego. So they'll ask them questions while they're building because their mind is free to just wander. And it kind of leads back to the movie almost in a way. You know, that kid is free to let his mind wander and come up with whatever crazy things he wants to do. So.
Any comments on the movie, guys?
Yeah, it's one of two from his list that I actually saw in theaters. I own it on Blu-ray as well. And I can relate to the dad, Lord Business, don't touch my stuff. My kid knows all about that, and he's pretty sneaky. He moves my things around and makes sure it goes back in the dust hole.
Yeah, I love the things from the real world as well, like the Kraggle ends up being crazy glue and things like that are very clever, you know, so,
Yeah, just an overall fun movie, good for everybody.
I enjoyed the fact that when they were making the actual movie, the behind the scenes part of it, the documentaries on the DVD or the Blu-ray were talking about how it's all CGI, but they still put in, you know, the cracks of the blocks, the shadowing, the, you know, fingerprints. They CGI'd fingerprints on the blocks to make it seem as though it was still stop animation, because that's the experience you have. That's the old bit of Lego you found, you know, in the box, you know, thousands of days later after you finished making the set, and that's the bit you then go on to use in your imagination. So the fact that they took the time whilst making this film to think that far ahead, I think that's one of the reasons why it stands out for me. So yeah, absolutely. Paul, any comments?
Oh, I was hoping you weren't going to come to me. I'm glad we got to this one first, because this is the worst one on the list for me. It is not my favourite film of all time. I did see it in the cinema, and it's aimed at a younger audience. I'm too old for this sort of film.
Never! Lego is ages 8 to 88, come on.
Hey, listen, we've got boxes and boxes of Lego here that was mine originally, 40 years old, at least, maybe older than that, so... I've got Lego here that's older than any one of you guys. So
you're sitting on a fortune.
I love Lego. Exactly, yeah. Just treading on it a lot of the time. This film to me is film. It feels too much like a Disney film. It's everything is awesome, for goodness sake. Really,
everything is awesome when you're part of a team. Come on.
Yeah. It should be your slogan, guys. You know.
Yeah, not for me. Lego Batman, on the other hand. Excellent, but great spin-off from this film. But no, I
think Lego Batman was run very close and is hilariously funny. You know, I did go to see that in the cinema, and I remember laughing so hard at all of it because it is brilliant. I just think the story isn't quite as good as, and if it is a spin-off from the Lego movie, where's the kid and the dad in that one?
It's all Lego. Moving on.
So we're not going to have Everything is Awesome playing out at the end of that bit.
Who's editing? Oh, yes.
Well, before we move on to number nine, I just need to say one thing. The airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow is roughly 11 meters per second, or 24 miles per hour, beating its wings 7 to 9 times per second rather than 43. It's true, a 5-ounce bird cannot carry a 1-pound coconut, but furthermore, no swallow weighs 5 ounces. The barn swallow, which is most people think is actually a swallow, weighs only 20 grams, 2/3 of an ounce. And your next movie choice is...
Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Great film, 1975. I was going to ask you then, is it an African or a European swallow? which is, I think, possibly one of the funniest films ever. I know a lot of people love Life of Brian, and it is great. But for me, this was my first introduction to Monty Python. I think it was in the summer holidays. I was maybe 11 or 12, and I was watching TV late one evening. And this film popped up, and it had only been about 5 minutes in, and I didn't know who Monty Python were, never heard of them before, and I thought it was hilarious. It got to the bit at the beginning with the French guy in the castle, you know, the English Kniggets, and I thought, this is brilliant. And I remember putting a VHS in, because the next day I was going down to my friends in the summer holidays. I put a VHS in, we missed the first 10 minutes, and I got on my bike the next day and cycled down there and said, you have to watch this, it's the funniest film I've ever seen. And we watched it about 5 times that day. We kept rewinding the VHS and watching it again and again. And it's just hilarity all the way through. You know, clearly those guys were onto something, I'd say.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. And a really good film that you've just seen. You just said there you saw with your friend and you spent all day watching it over and over again. It generates memories. Not just of the film, but of that day and the time that you first saw it, and the first, you know, so that, and that can elevate a film to, you know, legendary status because of the my friend Paul, we've spoken about this. We went to see Tron about 5 times. We had to go and see it in the cinema because we didn't have VHS in them days, but we saw it. You know, we went every day to see that film, and that, so that film is one of my favourite all time films, and always will be, because we went to see it so often, but because of that, the memories it brings back, as well as the fact that it's a good film, and that's what you're saying there with the Holy Grail.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, I kept that VHS. I mean, you guys must remember writing on VHSs what was on them and punching the tabs out so they couldn't be recorded over. I had hundreds of VHSs like that that people weren't allowed to touch. and this one was just brilliant all the way through, you know. And even to the point where I was talking to my kids today at dinner and telling them I was going to be on the podcast, and they were going through the films that were on the list, and they didn't know what this was. So I played to them. They're 5 and 7, so I couldn't play them a lot of it, but I played them the rabbit scene where it bites the guy's heads off. And I kind of forgot about the head falling off, but they thought it was hilarious, you know. And they're 5 and 7. They were creasing up at the dinner table thinking how good it was. So it, you know, it transcends. And the more you watch it, the more little jokes you pick up on, you know, like the fact that when they go shopping for a shrubbery, the car is being pulled by 2 peasants. It's not horses, you know. It's little things like that. And the coconuts are always a laugh. And, you know, so it's a very funny film. You know, obviously Life of Brian was a bit more polished and they had a lot bigger budget for that. But it's the little things that, you know, the little eccentricities that they had in this film. The fact that I remember reading that they had coconuts because they couldn't afford horses, so although that was an in-joke, they couldn't actually afford horses, so they had coconuts. And the rabbit, rather than buying a white rabbit for the scene, they borrowed one and then they covered it in red paint and realized the paint wouldn't come off at the end of the shoot, so they had to hand it back to the owner with, you know, a red rabbit. It's little things like that. It's a great film. If you guys have the DVD, I don't know if you have the DVD, but it's well worth watching again, because for 2 things, the special edition had 2 audio commentaries on it, and one of them is by the 2 Terrys on how they directed it, and the second commentary is basically John Cleese, Michael Palin, and Eric Idle complaining about the two Terrys and how terrible the shoot was and what they didn't like about shooting the whole film. In fact, I think they said the only bit they did enjoy was the Castle Anthrax day, because when they got back to the hotel, all the girls from the Castle Anthrax film were at their hotel, and they said that was the best day of shooting they had. So, so it's well worth a listen. It's very funny.
Yeah. Sean, any comments on the film?
Nope. I'm sure I must have seen it, but I have no recollection of it whatsoever.
Well, I'm surprised.
I'm glad you put it on there, because I actually remember us sitting in Mr. Taylor's biology class. We had to just sellotaped our workbooks over so that they didn't get anything on them. And we just ended up quoting that movie, I think, pretty much the whole way through that term. Anytime we were sat in his classes, because we did nothing else.
That was it. That was all we used to do, is you just quote, you know, the French knights, the knights who say me, you know, Tim the sorcerer. It's endlessly quotable, that film. It really is. And, you know, I have a weird thing with a lot of films and TV shows where I watch them again and again and again, is I can almost remember them word for word, you know, and they stick in my brain. I'm sure it's the same with you guys, but this one is, you know, particularly, I think, one of my favourites, you know. I thought we were an autonomous collective. It will always slay me. And who knows, we probably have been living in a dictatorship for the last couple of years. So.
Very true. There's literally nothing else we can say about that. Moving on to the next movie, perhaps.
Yes, well, I'd say, so this is the newest film on the list, 2019, and it is Endgame, or Avengers Endgame. I mean, I'm a big Marvel fan. I wasn't a huge comic book reader as a kid growing up. You know, I kind of knew of Marvel comics. I knew about Spider-Man and X-Men, and that was about it. And I think that was probably mainly because the TV shows were on a Sunday morning. But then obviously when Marvel got into trouble after selling some of their more popular characters like Spider-Man and the X-Men and the Fantastic Four, they had to fall back on what they had left. Which was Iron Man in, I think it was 2008, Iron Man, the first one.
Correct.
And he wasn't very well known at all, you know, wasn't very popular either, I think, in the Marvel Universe, and not a lot of people liked him as a character. But when you look at Endgame, I believe it's still now the highest grossing film of all time. So they clearly pulled it out of the bag. I can say I was one of the people who went to see it twice, because I do know that I think they were really close to beating the record for Avatar, but their box office had just started to decline, and it looked like they weren't going to beat it. And then they re-released it with some extra deleted scenes in it to get people back to the cinema to beat Avatar's record. And I was one of those people who went back. And there was only one deleted scene. It was with the Hulk saving some people from a burning building. But it was worth it. We went back and I watched it again for another 3 hours. Took a wee midway this time, because obviously 3 hours last time, you had to hold it in. You didn't want to miss a single thing. And it was fantastic. I mean, I think it was 22 Marvel movies. This was the last one. And it ended all of the movies and all of the story arcs. For me personally, it ended them all perfectly. It rounded up every little thing. Obviously, they're now going on with Phase 4, but you could have ended it there, and I think that would have been, I would have been happy with that, you know. It was absolutely fantastic. The end of it was superb. We went to the new cinema in Bluewater with all the nice chairs to watch the end of it. And at the end of it, I've sat next to my wife with a few friends. I could hear sobbing, and I thought, oh, that's Louise. She must be upset that, you know, I won't give it away if no one's seen it, that the film's ended. And when I looked around, it was my one of my mates, Andy, was crying his eyes out at the end of the film. So it has that effect on people. You know, even he was upset about it. So, yeah, just a massive, massive film. Like you say, the climactic end battle, 30 minutes long, I think it was, which is what people with a blockbuster like that, it's what you want to see, just endless. Oh, look at that. There's that superhero. There's that guy. You know, oh, look at that. Ant-Man just stepped on that guy. It's brilliant, you know. So, yeah, fantastic film for me. Rounded the universe off in a very, very good way.
After waiting for, what was it, 12 years to get to the end of so many different characters and somebody, it was brilliantly written. And like you say, the way it ended all of those arcs off is incredible. And of course, the end scene, you know, the funeral at the end, that's just heartbreaking. And the, you know, when it's like bookended, you know, you start with him, you finish with him. It's it's just a great way. And to have everybody lined up at the end there, and the camera pans around, and they go around everybody. It's just a great tribute to all of the actors who have, you know, invested a lot of time in this. I mean, you know, Chris Evans has put in a lot, you know, multiple appearances in a lot of the films, and annoyingly doesn't look any older than he did when he started, although he does look a lot older than when he started out as the Human Torch, but we won't go into that. It was a very good, very well written, brought everything to it. I mean, if that had been a different story or had been a slightly different change to anything, I think it would have been a totally different film, and a lot of people would have said, no, that's not doing justice to the characters. But this did. And the thing is, when we got to the end of it, and you finish it, and the titles go up, it's the biggest sigh of relief I have ever had at the end of a film. Because finally, after 12 years, we finally get to the end of all of these flipping superhero films. That's it now. Draw a line underneath it. I don't want to see any more for a long time. But let's come back to them in another 12 years when we can, you know, just, you know, say, oh, well, let's do this again. No, they have to bring out more. So,
well, I mean, it's been 12 years almost with coronavirus, so we're due for another one now. That's yes. The way it works.
Maybe that will be the next villain. So.
And the annoying thing is, I kept saying to, every time a new film came out, I kept saying to my lads, "We'll have to watch the others to catch up and remember where we are." And after the first six films, I said, we're not doing that again. I just haven't got enough time in the day to sit down and watch them all. And I keep thinking one day I'll do a rewatch of all of them in the correct order, in the right, you know, sort of chronological order, that it all makes sense.
We'll do that when I come for a visit.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll spend the whole 3 weeks, just put the first DVD on, and then when we finish the last one, you can leave.
That's it.
We'll be playing the movies in the background whilst we're teaching you lightsabers, and we'll also take you to a pub. We've got a lot of things to fit in whilst you're over here.
I better take 2 weeks.
2 weeks!
2 weeks! 2 weeks! And what we'll do is we'll get all of the DVDs from Snips just around the corner.
Perfect. It all comes
together. It all comes together, like, yes. Endgame. It all comes together.
Right.
I like how you type that. And then the cosmic pizza will explode at the end.
Yes, yes, and I can't agree more. It's a fantastic film. It's the second of the two that I've seen in the theater, and it's the last Blu-ray that I bought recently. So yeah, I'm right on there, right on board with you.
And it's your second Chris Pratt movie as well. So like, you're already tying in your list as you're going through. I'm seeing, you know, little bits just weaving in through your list,
yeah.
As well as the end signatures. The thing I really liked was the end signatures during the credits, where they took the time to write the names on the screen, which put me in mind of a certain Star Trek VI. So it gave me those feels when I saw it for the first time. I was like, oh, it's like Star Trek. It just brings it in. So I loved it for that as well, which may tie into another future movie on this list. So as we're going through, but as we move on, we've got the next film on the list, which is...
Number 7 is True Lies. So, 1994, True Lies. Yeah, maybe not the best Arnie film, people would argue, but for me, probably one of his best. Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jim Cameron, you know, that's a match made in heaven. I mean, I think they did another film that was quite successful, but we won't talk about that one. Again, this for me is very much, True Lies for me was very much a pre-teen movie. You know, when I was in my pre-teens and getting into my early teens, we loved anything with guns, with chicks, with, you know, terrorists being shot off the side of Harrier jump jets into helicopters filled with other terrorists, you know, quips like, you know, you're fired and all that sort of stuff. it was great. It was really, really good for me. It's a funny film as well. I think Arnold Schwarzenegger is a great comedic actor. A lot of people don't give him credit for that, but I think he's really funny in a lot of his films. For me, Last Action Hero, I think he's hilarious in that film. And he's really good in this one as well. And then it's also got a stellar cast, like Jamie Lee Curtis is fantastic in it. Art Malik was really good as the bad guy. Tia Carrera's in it, always looking good. And she's funny. And then, of course, Bill Paxton as the sleazy car salesman. Bill Paxton as Carlos the Jackal. Everyone loves him at it, when I did the list, I was sat the other night in bed going through a few notes, and True Lies was randomly on telly, so I stayed up till 12:30 watching it just because I thought, wow, this is on, I might as well watch it now. And I nearly did it. I got all the way to the bit where the Harriers land on the Florida Keys runway, and I fell asleep by that point. But it's just a great film, and like, you watch it all the time. I think one of my favourite bits is when the guy who's torturing says, he tells him how he's going to kill him all, and he's like, oh, my handcuffs, I picked them. Just the look on that guy's face is just priceless for me. And I think because it was probably one of the first Arnie films I'd seen, I'd heard about Terminator, from a friend, and then I was a bit... He told me it was really good, but quite gory. And I think when I was, 11, 12, I was a bit scared to watch it. So knowing that he was in that film and people had said that they'd enjoyed it so much, I thought, well, this one had a lot less gore and was a lot more enjoyable as a 11, 12-year-old to watch and enjoy. And I think that's probably what got me into Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm a massive fan of him. Got a lot of his films on DVD and read his autobiography and all that, and this for me I think is one of his best. Maybe it's the Jim Cameron directing it that makes it, but I think together they are really good together, so
yeah,
great film.
Oh, I agree.
Charlton Heston in it as well film. Sorry forgot that.
Oh yes.
You forget. Yeah,
well, that's the link to Endgame, because actually his look is based on Fury from the Marvel comics.
Of course.
Jim Carron specifically said, because he wanted to be a comic artist when he was younger, he wanted his guy in charge of the Secret Service to look like Nick Fury. So that was another link to another part of your
list.
There you
go. That's good. And they're part of... because they're not like CIA or anything like that. I think they're called like the Omega Force or something. And I think that linked back to a film that Charlton Heston had done called like the Omega Sector that he was in. That was in a similar sort of vein. So it's very clever, Jim Cameron.
Yeah, I'm just so glad that you brought this onto your list. It's always good to see a Bill Paxton movie on the list. I'm a huge fan of his. And I think this character is hilarious. He's just talking away about all these things. I mean, Arnie just punches him. And you think,
yeah.
Whoa, oh my God, he's killed you. You can't do that. Yeah, that's right. And then it's all, that's what he wanted to do, and that's not what he did do. And he's trying to chat up his wife. Oh, it's just so funny. I mean, all these things linked into each other. Jamie Lee Curtis is a very, very attractive woman. And I love the scene where she's obviously trying to seduce Arnie, and he's all, at least like lying there, she's trying to strip off all sexy and do all this, and she keeps failing, and they're not coming off the way they should be. It's just absolutely brilliant. It just destroys the whole mood, the whole scene goes, and it's fantastic. And I love the twist at the end where they get together and they become partners and all this. It's just a great, great film. And we only saw it, I think we did this as a film night, probably a couple of years ago now, but recent enough that I can still remember a lot of it. Previous to that, the only time I'd seen it, I think, was at the cinema. So it was just a good all-round film. Like you say, it's a good,
It's very
Schwarzenegger film and very well written.
Yeah, it's very enjoyable. And I know I was reading about it with the scene with Jamie Lee Curtis when she's stripping off, when she falls over. I believe that was an actual... Arnold didn't know she was going to do that, so she did it, and that's why he sits up in the chair and then realizes he's being filmed and he sits back down again. So
that's good, because you think he's going to go up and help her. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's it. And I know Jim Cameron's got a brief voice cameo in it. He's the voice of the helicopter pilot who's going, "Oh yeah, she's got her head in the guy's lap, all right. Yahoo!" That's Jim Cameron saying that. So. Which is brilliant, and I love the fact he just speeds up at that point. You know, it makes me laugh. So, and it's little things like that, isn't it? Like when she tries to run away as they're capturing her, one of the guys from his unit obviously doesn't know that, you know, they shouldn't be doing this. Hits his wife, so Arnold then punches him in the gut. You know, it's all those little things make it very enjoyable, so. More believable, I think. So.
Sean, any comments on True Lies?
It's been decades since I've seen it, so I have very vague memories. I know I have it on Laserdisc in the next room, so maybe I'll have to give it a go. But is that the movie where he says, "Get to the chopper"? Is it that one? Or is that a different movie?
No, that's Predator. So that's Predator.
That is Predator. Okay.
He's like, "No, another excellent film."
I love Arnie, but all the movies and all the quotes just get jumbled in my head, and I never remember where they come from.
I always remember True Lies when I was a kid, because it was the one with the Harriers, and they had they borrowed them off the Marines, didn't they? It was like $100,000 for the shoot. They borrowed them, and they blew up. So the Florida Keys Highway was being replaced at the time. And they rebuilt sections of the bridge that had already been demolished, and then got the Marines to blow them up with their Harriers. And I always remember that scene with the when they're coming in and they're like, "Oh, those Mavericks won't set off the nukes, will they? And Arnold just goes, "No, that's a negative." And then he's like, "We hope." You know, he does that look to his mate and thinks, "Yeah, we might be all right." So.
Well. If there's nothing else to say, we'll move on to the next movie.
Right after this promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
More positive than a New Day pancake. More fun than a superkick party. It's the wrestling podcast from the host, who is the hammer-swinging, burrito-eating, well, you know the rest, of Thunder Talk. Sexy. Thor. It's the Ring of Thunder, found in the Thunderverse and among the great podcasts of the ESO Network.
All right, the next film on our list is another sort of action comedy as well. What is it?
So this actually links back to the previous podcast you guys did. For me, though, Lee Love Back to the Future Part 2. For me, it's Part 3. Back to the Future Part 3 is my number 6 choice. I did enjoy Back to the Future Part 2, but again, this probably harks back to, like we were saying earlier, when you remember things when you were a kid. I always remembered the cowboy Back to the Future more than any of the other two. Maybe because, you know, it was in the West and I love cowboys and trains. It had a train in it, which is perfect. And I thought, again, much like Endgame, it rounded off the trilogy in a perfect way. Everyone is okay at the end. Everyone gets to live their lives. You know, yeah, the DeLorean gets destroyed, but Doc wanted that. But then he gets back from the future anyway in his new steam-powered time machine, has two kids, lives his life, you know. And it was brilliant. It was a great way to end almost a perfect trilogy. Probably the perfect trilogy. I mean, it's a bold claim, but I would class it as a trilogy like that, because there've been no spin-offs, there've been no prequels, there's been nothing else. Whereas a lot of my other favorite trilogies, like Star Wars, Aliens, things like that, have all had extra movies added onto them that, to a certain, some of them you could argue probably weren't needed, like Alien Resurrection probably wasn't needed. And Back to the Future Back to the Future as a whole has resisted that, and I believe a lot of that is down to the guys who kind of own it. I think it's the writers and the directors have always resisted making a prequel or a reboot, and I think that makes it a perfect trilogy because it is just three films that start off well, tell a great story, and end well. You know, yeah, I think it's and it's enjoyable. That the third one is just a lot of fun. You know, him going all the way back to cowboy times, walking around dressed up like he is, like Marty is, you know, refusing to take off his knee case sneakers, you know, and all that sort of stuff is really makes me laugh. It's really funny. So
no, I agree. It is I think it's the best one of the three. It's again exactly the same like you were saying. I think I've grown into liking westerns. I got them when I was younger, but I think I appreciate them a little bit more now. and this is great. This is because it's very little science fiction all the way through, and it is more of a cowboy film, and it is about, you know, defeating bullies, and it's just like any Clint Eastwood film. Hence the reason he calls himself Clint Eastwood, which is hilarious when he comes out calling him Mr. Eastwood. Which I believe Clint Eastwood himself actually liked and gave his blessing to, and he was quite happy with that. And yeah, it's you know, good to see Doc getting to the girl at the end, and you know, you're thinking, how can he do it? How can he do it? And he eventually gets it. And it's all good. It's all good. And there's still the, you know, right at the end, there's still a little nods to the previous films. You know, there's little things in there that, you know, still show that it's part of the trilogy. And it plays, as we said in the previous previous episode when we discussed this, it plays in its own sandbox, so it doesn't break its own rules when it comes to the time traveling part of it. So yes, it is. It's a really good film, really really good film, and I think it rounds off that trilogy perfectly.
No, I echo the same things. It's, you enjoy it more because you've seen the other two and you see all the references to the previous movies, or they're playing on that where they switch their catchphrases. And, you know, this is heavy and, you know, great Scott. But yeah, they're each saying each other's lines. They've been so comfortable with these characters, they can now switch it up a bit. I saw it's another movie where there's a Western world, just like in the Lego movie. So, you know, another yeah, link yeah, there that you're going through with a train that plummets into a ravine. So there we go, another one as well. Yeah, just there's so many trivias and facts about it. You know, Michael J. Fox for a short time actually passed out because they really did hang him when Biff was trying to lynch him. And there's so many other things, like Clint Eastwood's Pale Rider in 1985. Is the set, the town that they're in, is the set for Pale Rider, which was knocked off the top spot by Back to the Future 1. So it all comes full circle. And there's all these little tidbits, and there's so much going on. But just enjoying the film, like you say, little science fiction, action and westerns and cowboys, and it's got that, you know, it's like a little boys film, isn't it? It's just that kind of, you know, the action adventure, riding on horses and getting the girl at the end. It's just, it's so good to watch. Yeah. I can't praise it enough. So I completely agree with this choice as well. Sean?
Yeah, no, you guys have said everything that I could have said. It's the most memorable of the three. It's the most fun. It ties it all together, just like you said. And the only other piece of trivia I know is that it was filmed at the same time as number two. And that's all I've got. It's great. I own it on Laserdisc as well, the trilogy. So there you go.
Yeah, it's one of my big Blu-ray. I've got the Blu-ray. Well, I had the DVD special edition, and then when Blu-rays came out, you obviously have to get the Blu-ray special edition. So I've kept them both. I couldn't bring myself to get rid of the DVD edition of it, you know. But it is brilliant. I mean, even to the point where in the third one they're putting the clock tower up, you know, that it all starts from in the first one. You know, it's all the little things like that is. I really, yeah, it's great. And like you say, playing into fantasies of being a kid, you know, Marty's walking around with a gun on his hip the next morning, you know, acting all cool and be like, yeah, I've got a six shooter, you know. It's what you wanted as a kid. You wanted a six shooter with a cool holster. There is one thing I've always potentially thought about number three that I never wondered if it was a bit of a plot hole. And you guys know the movie fairly well. So Marty, when he gets back to Cowboy Times, rips the fuel line on the DeLorean and the petrol pours out, and that powers the internal combustion engine. Now, Doc Brown, they don't have any fuel. That's obviously the main problem. Doc Brown had a DeLorean that he had hidden in a mine in Cowboy Times, because that's what had taken him back there. Was there no point, like, I always wonder this, could they not have gone to that DeLorean and siphoned the petrol tank out of that one and put it in the other DeLorean? Is that a plot hole? I've always wondered. I've said it to a few of my other friends. They're like, no, that wouldn't work. But I feel it's a bit overlooked sometimes. Do you think it's possible? Who knows?
It's definitely worth investigating.
Well, there's obviously no truth in this art, so that's it. The film's ruined. It's over. We're never going to watch
sorry,
it again
I've
now.
Ruined it now.
Because Doc could easily build a new tube. I mean, it might be thicker than the original tubing was, but he could easily build something. He built a refrigerator that was the size of a warehouse before refrigeration. That's so it. He's got to be able to figure out one fuel line and being able to siphon it. Surely.
That's what I thought. I mean, a few of my friends have said, "Oh, maybe the petrol went out of the other DeLorean, or, you know, maybe it didn't have petrol in it because it was powered by Mr. Fusion in the second one." But
I could come in with some facts here and say the petrol does actually have a shelf life and wouldn't work after a number of weeks, months, or whatever it would be.
Apparently it's 3 months or so.
Oh, really?
Three to six months, yeah, I think.
There you go. That's probably what it is then. Fair enough. Yeah. But there you go. That's my point disproved then. It wouldn't have worked.
You see, we educate on this podcast.
Well, from one time travel adventure, moving on to the next movie.
Yes. So the next one, I think Dan especially may be quite happy with this. I think you all will be. So number five is Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. 1986.
No, it's called The One with the Whales. The Whales. That's what it's called.
Which is, that's how I described it to my kids today. I was like, well, we could watch Star Trek 4. You're old enough to watch that. And I said, well, but actually, you'll have to watch 2 and 3 first to get the story. So, forgetting that they're 5 and 7. They won't care.
So, listen, before we start, if you really want to know what I think about this film, then all you have to do is go and listen to me and Dan talking on the Temporal Trek podcast. Get yourself over there. We did. It was such a long discussion. It took two attempts. We had to have two bites of the cherry. We made it into a two-parter, along with Ross, who was a brilliant guest as well. We had such fun recording it. So I don't have to say anything about this point because it's a brilliant film. I'm off to get a drink. I'll be back in 2 seconds.
He's basically just said what I was about to say, because I literally wrote no notes and just said, please go to this episode and then just like go to my other podcast. That's fine. But no, Star Trek IV, there is, you know, it's the end of a trilogy because you've got, you know, 2 and 3. So exactly the same as Back to the Future. You're enjoying it all coming to fruition. You're having the, you know, the nice, relaxing, family, fun, friendly and funny, you know, feel good movie after two really like hard hitting, you know, death and destruction and rebirth and really like heavy movies. And then you've got this nice time travel piece with double dumbass on you and whales and
too much LDS in the 60s.
So much LDS. I cannot tell you. Oh, too much. But yeah, so what more about Star Trek IV puts it on the list for you, perhaps over and above any other Star Trek films?
So, yeah, Star Trek is a big personal love of mine. I'd say it competes with Star Wars for the top spot. And this one, I can't remember if it was the first Star Wars film the first Star Trek film I'd seen. But it was, as you say, it was certainly the most memorable. And that was because as a kid, I had two big loves when I was a really young kid, and that was whales and dinosaurs. So a film with two humpback whales in for me, with Star Trek as well, was perfect. And, you know, they had a different ship to what they normally had. They were flying around in a bird of prey, which, you know, was fantastic. You'd only seen it, you know, a few times on screen. They were, you know, in America, back in the past. The fact that I believed, because I was quite young when I watched it, that there was a place in America that actually had whales in an aquarium. I love going to aquariums. I was like, oh my God, go and see humpback whales in an aquarium. That's what America's like. It's crazy. I didn't realize that was just all effects. And it was just...
You mean it's not real?
I know. When they emptied the tank out, I was like, oh, that tank is a little bit small for two grown humpback whales. But, you know, maybe that's why they had to get rid of them. but it was, like Dan says, it was funny. It was lighthearted. I think it has my favourite line from a Star Trek film ever, when he goes for pizza and he's trying to explain to the doctor who he is, and she's like, "Don't tell me you're from outer space." And he says, "No, I'm from Iowa. I only work in outer space." That for me is just—I love that line so much.
It's funny every time.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's true.
It is, isn't it? You know, he's like, he could probably name all the places in Iowa for her if he had to, but he doesn't know what a bill is for pizza, so, you know, he doesn't have money in the 24th century. So, and it's just great. It's an enjoyable, fun film. All the little effects, like when the bird of prey lands in the field and crushes the rubbish bin. You know, you see it get crushed under the feet.
Garbage can. Yes.
Sorry, a garbage bin. What are you saying? it crushes that, you know, and it's just, it's very funny. It's very enjoyable. There's little links, like the fact that he sells his glasses to that guy in the antique shop, you know, and he says, "Oh, weren't they a present from Dr. McCoy?" He's like, "Oh, and they will be again," you know. It's that. it's very good. I was a little bit confused as to how Sulu can fly a helicopter. That bit always escapes me, but I guess it's just because he's a great pilot. He can fly anything, you know.
he's just that good, yeah. That's it.
Yeah. And then now the best thing about it is transparent aluminum, or transparent aluminium, now actually exists. I don't know, you guys did you discuss this on the other podcast? I hope it was that guy who invented it, but... you know, that it was clever in so many ways. Like when Dr. McCoy says, "You realize by giving him the formula, we're changing the future." And Scotty just says, "Why? How do we know he didn't invent it?" So he's like, "Oh, fair enough." And it was that blasé approach to the temporal directive that, you know, just makes it more enjoyable. They don't care. They just want to get home and save the world. So,
yeah. And I love it when he just sits at the computer and he says, "Computer? You might want to use the keyboard."
"Hello,
keyboard.
Computer."
"Keyboard. How quaint."
Yes.
And Dr. McCoy running through the hospital saying, "Well, we're living in the dark ages."
Oh, it's brilliant, isn't it? Yeah. Oh. And he gives that pill.
"I've grown a kidney."
Yeah, he gives him the pill. "I've grown a new kidney." Absolutely fantastic. it's very it's enjoyable, hilarious film. I love it. I think the whales resonated the most with me, like when they fly the bird of prey down over the whaling ship and scare the whalers off. You know, I think the 10-year-old me wanted to think, oh, they'll never hunt another whale again, they'll be terrified of aliens now. So it had a nice, it had a hidden conservation message in it, you know, as well.
Not so hidden.
Well, no.
No, it was pretty blatant. It was blatant.
A necessary point was being made.
Yeah, I think for a 10-year-old, I was like, oh, I kind of get it now. Maybe we should save stuff. Like, you know, the mysterious aliens coming from nowhere and nothing can, you know, defend against them. The fact they take out all those space stations, like power them down. All that added up to be a great film. And then at the end, they come back at the same point at when they left, you know. I think it was potentially one of the first time travel films I vaguely remember watching. I may have seen Back to the Future before or after it. But the fact that they could leave at one point, spend a whole movie doing something, and then come back at the exact same point, like, blew my mind as a kid. I thought that was fantastic. It's just a great movie. Really good.
I was just going to say it's funny, it's quotable, it's memorable, and it epitomizes the spirit of the 80s, and it's almost a perfect movie.
Yeah, they're all really good in it. And just before lockdown started, because I know a lot of people if forced to pick one of the original Star Trek movies, they'll pick number two. And number two is a fantastic film. It really is. And I was very lucky that just before lockdown, I think it was literally like the week before it all started kicking off in London and places were closing. Me and Phil, my friend Phil, who does Sabre class with me, we got to go to the Apollo to see William Shatner do. So we went to a special screening of Star Trek 2. And then afterwards, there was a question and answer session with Bill there. And he came out on stage. And the theatre was almost empty. I'd say it was about, there was about half the theatre was empty. And then Bill did like a question and answer session after the film. And that was fantastic. You know, that was really good. It was, if he ever does anything like it again, I'd recommend you guys obviously go, because it was superb. It was great to watch the film with a bunch of people. A lot of people were dressed up. I had my yellow captain's top on, and it was very enjoyable. And obviously William Shatner's hilarious. I've met him once before at the very first. What was it called, Dan? You went to one in Birmingham. There was a specific Star Trek expo, wasn't there?
Star Trek, Destination Star Trek, the con that was there. And it flits between London and then Birmingham and then keeps on going back and forth.
That was it, yeah. And I'd met him there. We went to the very first one at the XL Centre when they had all five captains there. And my I hope it's my pension, is in the loft. I managed to get a canvas of all five captains. And then I went round and got each of them to sign it. It's all signed individually by them, so I'm keeping that for a rainy day. It was fantastic, but very nice to meet them all. I mean, and they all seemed so nice. I mean, I was terrified of meeting Patrick Stewart. I was a little bit like nervous, I asked him a question, because at the time I was quite a big American Dad fan. So I said, "Do you enjoy doing American Dad?" And he said it's the favorite thing it's my most favorite thing I do, which was interesting. but out of all of them, it was Scott Beluca, who was I never get his surname right. He was so nice. I don't know if it helped because me and Phil were kind of the last ones in the queue for his signature, but we chatted to him for, I'd say, it felt like longer, but it was at least 5 minutes or so. We chatted to him and he made a quip that Patrick Stewart was the only one who signed my thing in a different coloured pen. And they were all so lovely, you know. And there was, like you say, you met Cole Meaney. There were so many other people there from all the Star Trek series. It was fantastic. It was a good day out, so really good day out. Long. My wife didn't like me very much at the end of it, so lots of sitting around.
You see, the last one we went to, I went to the con, and she did all of the pampering stuff back at the hotel, so that was the trade-off. Like, she got all the other extra bits, so, you know, I argue that I got the better end of the deal. She seems to see it the other way. There we go.
That works well.
Just like Greenpeace looking on a bird of prey above, they're going to be afraid of aliens. And your next film is...
Aliens!
Yeah, another Bill Paxton film.
It all links
film.
Together.
Yeah,
another Bill Paxton.
Perfect.
It all links together.
I think Bill Paxton is probably the best character in this film. Aliens, 1986, superb sequel. I mean, Alien was terrifying, and I think I watched it once and thought, I don't know if I want to watch that again for a long time. And then my friend was like, "Oh, come up and watch Aliens. It's much better than the first one. You'll really enjoy it." And it obviously isn't much better, but it was, again, because I was, you know, 13, 14, it was much more enjoyable for me. I went up to my mates. We watched it on VHS again. My friend Richard had a funny habit of, he didn't like any of the talky bits. So the first time I watched Aliens, it was fast forward, fast forward, fast forward. Oh, here's a bit of action. Fast forward, fast forward. Oh, here's another bit of action. So I watched all the bits of the action and didn't quite understand what was going on. So I had to borrow the video off him, go back home and watch it again. And then I understood. And he's never got out of that phase. He's always, if he doesn't like a film, he'll fast forward to an action scene and then watch the rest of it. So I tend not to watch films with him anymore because it gets a bit irritating after a while. Aliens is, as I'm sure you'll agree, is superb. I mean, Bill Paxton is great in it. You know, Sigourney Weaver's superb. All the guys, the whole squad of Marines. Again, directed by Jim Cameron, who is superb director in this. And it's just great. Absolutely brilliant film. I read up quite a few bits on it because it was obviously filmed at Pinewood, same as Alien. And I know that obviously Alien was directed by Ridley Scott. And Pinewood, I think a little bit odd in movie studios, is it has a film crew that work at Pinewood. They're not related to the film. So they stay on the set at Pinewood for each film that comes in. I don't know if that's still the way, but that's how it was back in the day. So a lot of the crew for Aliens had directed Alien with Ridley Scott, and they were fiercely loyal to Ridley Scott. Obviously, he was born up north, and Jim Cameron at the time, and I think when he directed Aliens, wasn't very well known, and the crew hated him. Like, when you read up about it, they had major falling outs. I think he sacked the cinematographer and the majority of the crew walked off the set and refused to come back until he was reemployed. To try and win them round, he organised a screening of his newest film that was just being released, which was Terminator, and invited all the crew to come along. He put on drinks and food and all that, and none of them turned up. So they just did not like him at all. But despite all that, he managed to make a fantastic film. You know, ties into the first film really well. The fact they go back to LV-426 to investigate, the ship that they didn't know was there. Obviously, the colonists are there now, but they don't know the ship's there until Burke sends them out to look for it, and then they lose contact and they have to go back with the Sulaco, with the Marines. And it was just enjoyable. The fact that the first film was, you know, the alien was terrifying because you didn't see it a lot of the time. And that's what made it so scary. And I think in Aliens, you still don't see them a lot. You know, there's only a few scenes where you'll see a fully grown one or one standing up. But the fact that the Marines come back with a bit of, you know, in the future firepower to take them on, but they still get their asses handed to them, is just brilliant. You know, it's really enjoyable, and like the camaraderie between the Marines and all that. I know that the scene where they're all having breakfast together, that was one of the last films to be seen, one of the last scenes to be filmed, because at that point they'd made a whole movie together. So James Cameron obviously realised that they would all get on better together and they would be more relaxed and have a good time, and it's just little things like that. I know he managed to time everything perfectly. So at the end, when Bishop drops off Ripley and says, you have 15 minutes, you know, before the whole thing goes supernova, that is, if you set your stopwatch, that is actually 15 minutes, which obviously a lot of films I know don't really subscribe to that sort of ethos. You know, if they say, oh, we've got 10 seconds left, there's then half an hour before the bomb goes off. And that isn't the case with this film. You know, Ripley had 15 minutes to get down there, rescue Newt, and get out. And it happens again when Apone says, OK, we've got 10 seconds before they'll get off the APC. That is actually 10 seconds until they disembark and, you know, go into the compound to find the colonists. So it's little things like that make the movie what it is for me, as well as the stellar cast, you know, Hudson, Hicks, Apone, all the Marines are fantastic. They all have little quips and one-liners, like was it Hudson says to Vasquez, have you ever been mistaken for a man? And she says, no, have you? You know, it's little things like that that really make me enjoy the film. It's hilarious. So. Yeah, very good, very good. And I heard as well that apparently once the film was released, there were loads of businesses. I don't know if they called up the studio, but they were trying to get their hands on loaders to work in their warehouses because they thought they were a real thing. So that was there was a marked inquiry in where can we get a loader for our warehouse, please. So yeah, really enjoyable. Top film for me, Aliens.
Yeah, for me, it set the benchmark for sequels, and you know, loads of action sequels now follow that pattern. You have like the smaller movie is the first movie. You know, you have one adversary, the hero takes them on, they just barely survive, they move on, and then the second movie is the big war movie where you get more of the same villain all coming at you, but you might have a little bit of a better chance because you're more prepared this time. But it's still just as, you know, intense for the heroes. It set that template that I think so many sequels follow now. You can't really avoid Aliens and its stamp on everything that came after it.
No, I the only time I've seen this film is I was working away down in Birmingham, and we had to stay for a week, so we were put up in a hotel, and I came back one evening and put the TV on, see what's on, and Aliens had just started, so I thought, oh, yeah. I saw the first one, it was okay, but I don't really like horror, sort of blood, guts and gore, but, you know, it's on, I'm tired, so I sat down and, you know, on the bed watching it, and I watched it all the way through and thought it was an amazing film. Never seen it since. But it's the first time I've ever sort of sat down and thought, I can't take my eyes off this. It's got me hooked, and I don't want to miss a piece in case I miss something important. But I was transfixed. It was an amazing film. It's the only film that's ever really sort of grabbed me like that and grabbed my attention when I didn't particularly want to watch it in the first place. But yeah, I thought it was a really good film.
I don't know if you guys, you know, the motion tracker like that makes the film terrifying when they're, you know, because it's not really a horror film, and I'm like you, Paul, I'm not a big fan of horror slashy gore films, but when they're in the room and the motion tracker's beeping, you know, and they're getting closer and closer but they're still not in the room, was just, you know, that suspense is superb.
John? Yeah, no, you're right. It's the best one of the 27 odd Alien films and their spin-offs. It's the only one that I ever care to watch. I don't know how many times I've seen it myself personally. Of course, I own the quadrilogy box set. As you can see up there, there's if the camera is showing, there's an Alien right there on my shelf. I don't know what else I can say about it. It's awesome, and I think you have a thing for James Cameron.
I think so. I think it probably is the case. You know, he's directed a lot of my favorite films. I know it's not on the list, but Terminator 2 was one of my first VHSs as well. And yeah, he's just superb. Yeah, brilliant director. So.
Before we get into your top three, I think now's a good time for a promo from the ESO Network, perhaps.
What is the Rusted Robot Podcast? Hey there, this is Sean.
This is Josh.
And this is Kitty.
We're your weekly geekly pop culture news. We talk about comic books.
Movies.
Anime.
Celebrity deaths.
Collectibles.
Toys.
Movie news.
Upcoming trailers.
And so much more. Check us out on the ESO Network and everywhere podcasts are found. Your nerdy news specialist, the Rusted Robot Podcast.
Well, you know, Sean hadn't mentioned anything about any of his podcasts, so I thought we'd better put one of his in for a change.
Right, we're in the top three. We are in the top three now, so this is your final three. The third film on your list is...
Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump, 1994, is a very, very fond film of mine. I think if pushed, apart from my number one, if pushed and they said you had to watch one film for the rest of your life, it potentially would be this one again and again. And it's just, I didn't maybe realize until recently how much it divides a lot of people. A lot of people see it as a sappy pile of rubbish. But it's, I think it's along with this and Toy Story. Whenever Tom Hanks is on a chat show, he's always asked about Forrest Gump, always. So it has that kind of legacy about it. And again, I watched it when I was quite young. So although I thought the snapshots of American history were very clever and the way they put him in all the backgrounds, I didn't understand a lot of them. A lot of them passed me by and I didn't quite get it. Like when at the Virginia College they stopped the two black students from entering in. I didn't know what that was about. And, you know, when he meets some of the presidents, when he meets Richard Nixon, and Nixon puts him up in the Watergate Hotel, and then he calls security because, you know, he can see flashlights in a room and they're looking for a fuse box or something. But it turns out it was the start of the Watergate scandal. I get that now, but at the time I didn't understand it as well as I do, but it was still enjoyable. It's one of those endlessly quotable films again. You know, people always, I think the quotes have probably made it into hundreds of top 100 movie quotes and things like that. I mean, Lieutenant Dan is always my favorite. Yeah. New legs. and things like that. Like, I love when he turns up and he says, oh, I thought I'd try out my sea legs. He's like, but you ain't got no legs, Lieutenant Dan. That's always makes me laugh. And yeah, it's, you know, it was obviously massively popular. And I think he'd obviously done a lot of work, Tom Hanks, before this, but this was, it kind of gave him a lot of star power, this movie. I think, you know, it made, everyone knew him after Forrest Gump. You know, a lot of people had seen Big and things like that, and Turner and Hooch and things like that, but I think this made him a proper box office star. And it was, you know, and then, well, this and then Toy Story came out the following year, which, you know, obviously helped as well. But yeah, it's just an enjoyable film, you know, about a slightly simple guy trying to make it in the world. And the amount of the effect he has on American culture, you know, like when they have a young Elvis staying in his mum's house and he teaches him how to dance and things like that. It's very enjoyable and very sweet. But then at the same time, you know, when he goes to Vietnam, and his best friend Bubba's killed in the attack, is it's so heartbreaking. And Louise, my wife, refuses to watch it with me because she doesn't like it when his mum dies and when Jenny dies, and he reads out he leaves the little thing that the son has wrote. She refuses to watch it now. But it's a movie of extremes, I think, and it's very good. And it's very well shot. The attack in Vietnam, I understand, is kind of praised by a lot of Vietnam vets as one of the most believable action sequences of Vietnam ever, because you'd never see the Viet Cong. You don't see where they are. They just suddenly attack. The action's quick and fast, and then it's over, and then there's devastation afterwards. And I know a lot of Vietnam vets have said that's why it's so believable, because that's how it was out there. So, you know, although it is a soppy film, and a lot of people think that, Paul maybe, you kind of have to give it its due that it was massively popular, and it's a very good, the cinematography in it is amazing. You know, when he's running across America and you see all these vistas, you know, like of Utah and the lake that's so clear, it just makes it, yeah, it's a very well shot film and a very well directed and very well edited film, I think, and acted, of course.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's a lot of fun, but it's not one of those shows that you can watch casually. You have to actually pay attention to it, and you have to be in the mood for it. But like you said, it's super quotable. So anytime I meet somebody who is named Jenny or Jennifer, I always say to them, "I love you, Jenny," even if I've just met them, and maybe they don't even know the movie, but I have to say it. It's like when you meet somebody named Sydney. Do you like scary movies, Sydney? Same kind of thing. You just have to do it.
So that's why you're arrested all the time.
No wonder you moved up to Timmins. I was getting out the way.
Well,
yeah. I was going to say, does this apply to like the lady at Safeway and things like that? You know, you like.
It applies to anybody named Jenny. That'll be $74.99. Thank you. I love you, Jenny.
boss, he's back again. Can we get security? Security, please.
Yeah, get. Where's his medication? Yeah, where's his medication? Much. Quick.
The reason I would love this movie, though, is without this movie, without the technology of putting Tom Hanks's face into all these historical events, we don't get one of my favourite Star Trek episodes ever, which is Trials and Tribulations from DS9, where they put the crew into the old TOS episode where they use the exact same techniques. So without that, also, you don't get to his name. So there you go.
And you don't get Paul's favourite movie, Contact, also directed by Robert Zemeckis.
Very true. So, why don't you like the film again, Paul?
Oh, yeah. It's not that I don't like it, it's just that I've never seen it. So I can't really comment on it that much. I mean, it's got all the right ingredients. It's got Tom Hanks, who is probably the best actor of our time, as we speak. Mm-hmm. Sally Field, who I'm absolutely in love with and have been since Smokey and the Bandit back in the day. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And those two are amazing, amazing actors, without a doubt. It has, like you say, all these scenes that are technically incredible, and it's probably a good story, because I don't know the story, so I can't really comment on that. But I've never seen it, because I always look at it and think, it's Tom Hanks doing big again. And it's the same sort of stupid character. And I'm not trying to be offensive to be it at all, but, you know, that sort of type of film, I don't get it, and I don't like it, and I just don't like the sort of sympathy you have to feel for the character and all that. It's not my type of film. You know, it doesn't really sort of float my boat. I'm more sort of, you know, science fiction and action-y type of person. So this really, I have never seen it because I've always steered away from it. It may well be, well, you guys think it's an amazing film. It obviously is a huge film in the sense that Tom Hanks is always asked about it and, you know, asked to say lines from the film, etc., etc. Of course, it's a big film. It's just not my style of film.
Fair enough.
Moving on then to maybe a style of film that you do like, maybe, Paul. The next film on the list is...
So, number two is Star Wars, and it's The Empire Strikes Back.
Why is Empire Strikes Back your favorite?
Well,
because it's got AT-ATs, and AT-ATs are the best. How could you not like AT-ATs?
They are amazing.
And snowspeeders.
Yeah, love the snowspeed.
I'm a little bit obsessed.
I think again, it goes back to when I was a kid, a bit like Back to the Future 3 and Star Trek 4. It used to be Return of the Jedi. I would have said that was my favorite because it rounds everything off nicely. But as I've got older, I think I can appreciate Empire Strikes Back more, mainly because it ends on such a down ending, which is just like life, you know. Life isn't like Return of the Jedi. Yes. There's no Ewoks. You don't get...
No, it's like a box of chocolates.
But yeah, it just ends on a down ending. You know, Luke gets his hand chopped off. You know, Han Solo gets frozen, taken away by Boba Fett.
Spoilers!
Sorry. But it's just... It's a great film. Yeah, like you say, Sean, it has the AT-ATs, it has the snowspeeders. It has, for me, the best piece of Star Wars music out of all of the films, which is the asteroid chase scene. You know, I could listen. I signed up to Spotify so I could listen to that piece of music because I didn't want to buy the CD. I thought it's too much to buy a CD for one track, so I'll give Spotify a go, and that works. I've now got, you know, a Star Wars playlist, and that one's at number one. I think Duel of the Fates is a lot of people's number one, which is a great piece of music, but for me it's the asteroid chase scene is perfect. It takes what was good in Star Wars A New Hope and builds on it to, you know, the world building is so good in it. And in the first one, you know, you obviously see the blockade runner go by, and then you see the massive Star Destroyer go by, and you think, Jesus, that's huge. You know, the blockade runner fits inside it. And then in this one, you see the Super Star Destroyer, which is, you know, the Star Destroyers are the same size as the blockade runners were in the first film. I think I read somewhere that the Super Star Destroyer was like 11 miles long, which is ridiculous. But the Empire is that powerful, and this film shows how powerful they are, that they managed to build a ship like that. You know, and I'm sure they probably had more than one somewhere tucked away. And then it's that size as well. I think, like, the AT-ATs, when you're down on Hoth, they're huge. You know, they seem indestructible and unstoppable. And to an extent, they are. They take over and destroy the Hoth base. That carries on throughout the film. Like, you know, the worms in the asteroid are huge creatures that can swallow entire spaceships. I don't know what they live on most of the time, but there you go. And then Cloud City is just this massive floating city in a gas giant. It was, I think the scale of that really impressed me when I was younger. The fact that in the first film, you obviously know there's an emperor because there's an empire and he's mentioned a few times, but you get to see him in this film. You get to think, you know, well, Vader's pretty bad, but then there's somebody above Vader who's even worse. You know, you think, what's that got to be like if Vader and Moff Tarkin are willing to blow up planets? What's the emperor like? You know, it's little things like that. Obviously, it has that hugely famous line in it, which again is another spoiler. I'm sure you guys know it's always misquoted by people. They always say, "Luke, I am your father," and that's not what it is at all. And my youngest is called Luke, and you know, people will be like, "Oh, Luke, that's a nice name," but I'll always say he's named after Luke Skywalker because he is. So, you know, Louise got to name the first child. I got to name the second one, and I was like, "Well, Luke." So it was. I think it was.
And how is his how is his brother Chewbacca doing?
That's yeah. You know, I think it was one of the ones that I suggested. Louise was like, "Yeah, that's okay." So yeah, that's why he's called Luke. And it's great. You know, it's just one of the, probably it is the best Star Wars film ever. I think Rogue One is probably a close second. Loved Rogue One.
I was going to say that too.
Yeah, as a great standalone film, really enjoyable Rogue One. But yeah, this for me was just superb. And when you read about it, you know, like Lucas wanted to make it off his own back. He didn't want to have loans from the studios. And it was so successful in the end that it recovered its budget. I think the budget was like 18 million for the film or something. It recovered it in the first 3 months of it being open. It was such a successful film. You know, and I know it's, I think it was also the cause of the breakdown of his first marriage, so it probably wasn't as successful as George Lucas would have liked. You know, he made his money back, but he also lost his wife because it was such a trouble to make this film.
Where's the downside in that?
Yeah, but the film that we got, I think it's worth it.
Lose your wife, get a load of money. What, I still don't see what where the bad side is.
Plenty of fish in the sea.
Warning, wives, do not listen to this episode.
Okay, but the one thing I want to know, you named your son Luke. At every opportunity, do you ask him if he will join you as father and son to rule the galaxy together?
I do use that occasionally. One of the good ones is at dinner time. He eats his dinner with his finger all the time because he's only 5, so he uses his hands. So I'm always saying to him, Luke, use the fork. So that always comes out.
That's awesome.
That's the ultimate dad joke. I mean, that's a long play, that one, isn't it? 5 years you've waited for
that. Yeah.
Yeah. And he says no.
Totally worth it.
And when he says no, do you say, I'm your father?
I will do from now on. That's it, yeah. But yeah, and it's one of the...
When he leaves the peas.
It's one of those films. It's just, it meant so much to me. Having kids now has, you know, obviously put, I'm sure you guys are aware, it puts such a different emphasis on your life. And I was so excited as they got older to show them the films that I enjoyed. So films like a lot of these, like when I showed Jack the other day, Bill and Ted. And I held off for a long time with Star Wars. Because I wanted Jack, who is, he's 7 Jack now, but he loves movies. Like, you could put him in front of a telly and he would watch films all day. And it doesn't matter what film you put on, he'd watch it and he'd enjoy it. And he takes in the plot. So I waited for a long time with Star Wars because I wanted him to be able to take it in and enjoy it. And we got round it a little bit because he wanted to know a little bit about it. So we watched The Phantom Menace, first of all. I thought, well, that one's fairly safe. There's not too much giveaway. You know, the trade disputes might blank his memory out of all the other bits that happen. And we watched A New Hope when he was around 5. And he kind of enjoyed that. And we watched that a few more times. And then last year, I thought, right, it's time. He understands films now. We'll watch Empire Strikes Back. And I wanted to record the part where Vader reveals he is Luke's father to him. I thought, I'm going to record this because it will be amazing. We'll treasure this moment forever when he found out. You know, it's a massive reveal. Everyone's like, because when I was a kid, I didn't have that. I already knew that Darth Vader was, you know, Luke's dad, because you kind of hear it. The movies have been out for a while and people have probably said the line a bit and I got it. But he didn't know anything about it. So I recorded him and he watched it and he says, no, I am your father. And Jack in the video turns to me and just goes, Oliver was right. And I went, what? And it turned out that flipping Oliver at his school had told him that Vader was Luke's father. And I was like, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God. And he's like, oh yeah, Oliver told me a few months ago. I was like, oh, I was livid. It worked in my favour because I put it on Twitter and it got a retweet from Mark Hamill with a like. So he watched the video and enjoyed it. So that made it a bit better. But I was livid that that moment had been forever ruined by blimmin' Oliver at school. I never liked that child.
Yeah. Sod you, Oliver. Yeah, exactly. Never talking to you again, Oliver.
So yeah,
you know, I can remember when Return of the Jedi came out, when we got Return of the Jedi on DVD and we played it to my eldest son, who never seen it before, and he'd watched the other two and he was really into it. And we sort of left him in the room and me and my wife were making tea or whatever. And next thing he turns up in the kitchen, tears in his eyes, and said, "Dad, Yoda's died." We just turned around and went, oh man. Yeah, and there he is, tears running down his face, and like, oh wow, the first time he's actually got to see a character die in a film, you know, it was Yoda. So yeah, he was pretty upset about that.
Well, he had a long run though. 900 years is pretty good.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah, no, it is, and it is a fantastic film. Like when you see Yoda for the first time, you know, and you think he's this little tiny. How can he be a Jedi Master? He was so small, and then when he lifts the X-wing out of the swamp, like the music that goes with it, like John Williams is obviously amazing. You know, and Luke says, "I don't believe it." You know, it's just, yeah, it's a fantastic film. It really is good.
That is why you fail.
And I think as well, with all these retouches that Lucas did in 2004 and things like that, I feel like Empire escaped quite a bit of tinkering with. You know, there was a few things they changed. Obviously, they put like the actual Emperor in instead of the weird chimp thing they had in the first one. I don't know if you guys remember that in the original one. It had like giant eyes and looked terrifying. But they actually put the actual Emperor, you know, Ian McDiarmid, who played him. And they just touched up a few little bits, like I remember watching the special editions, and when the snowspeeders go under the AT-AT's legs in the old ones, you can see the AT-AT legs through the pillars of the snowspeeder cockpit. So they touched that up so you couldn't see it in the new films. Whereas, you know, things like Return of the Jedi and A New Hope have, some would say, I probably would in some aspects, have been made, yeah, it's a detrimental effect what Lucas did to a lot of that stuff. Like the weird noise that Obi-Wan makes is just odd now when you listen to it, when he scares off the sand people in the new one. And crucially for me, you know, you guys hopefully feel the same, is in Return of the Jedi, it was Darth Vader's silent sacrifice when he throws the Emperor over into the thing. That's what got me. Whereas now he's edited a no onto it, and he like sinks in his head like no, and then picks him up and throws him down shouting no, and it's ruined the end of Return of the Jedi for me. I refuse to watch that version of it now. I'll go back to my older DVDs and watch it without that bit in.
Yeah, there's nothing else I can say on that. As far as behind the scenes trivia, my favourite bit, and it links back to your number 9 pick, is that Carrie Fisher actually stayed at Eric Idle's rented house. He rents it out when he was filming Life of Brian. So Eric Idle has a link to Star Wars because he threw a party when he got back with Han Solo, the Rolling Stones, and Carrie Fisher, got them extremely drunk the night before, and they had to get up early to film all the Cloud City scenes, which is why when they turn up, they are so happy and joyful to be walking around those sets because they are still
off their faces, having drunk what was called Tunisian table cleaner, a type of very extreme alcohol. So Eric Idle had something to do with that film as well, so which makes it even better.
Perfect.
It all comes back together.
It does, doesn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly. It all weaves together. That's what I'm saying. All of these films have some sort of link together. Should we go to the big number one?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Drum roll.
Yeah, your number one pick, I think, has something to do with our previous Desert Island Discs, which ended with a monster movie, Jaws. But I would argue this is a bigger monster movie, purely in size, and it is...
It is Jurassic Park.
You can't say Jurassic Park without humming.
You certainly can't. No.
Anyway, yeah,
that's it. Yeah, and yeah. This is it. I mean, for me, this is the number one. As I said back with Star Trek IV, I was obsessed with whales and dinosaurs when I was a kid. So when Jurassic Park came out, it was my world. It was amazing. I remember it. I remember it now, going to the cinema to see it. It came out in 1993, so I was 10 years old. And I remember we were on holiday in Weston-super-Mare. We'd been camping. We'd been on the pier and wandered up and down. And then we came back through the town. And Jurassic Park was showing at the local cinema. And my dad and we were staying with some friends, our friend Hugh. We were like, right, let's go see it. And I went in and was hooked. Like, I had to shut my eyes at the bit where all the people got eaten because I was only 10 and that terrified me. But I'm happy to say I've seen those parts now. And it was just, it was the perfect film for me. It was brilliant. It's the scale of it is huge. As you say, like Jaws was a big monster movie, but this was just something else. The fact that they used actual, you know, animatronic dinosaurs, you know, this was, I mean, they had some CGI in it, but a lot of the dinosaurs were real and, you know, real life, real sized. And that, I think, now is why, when you watch it back now, a lot of the scenes with, like, particularly the T-Rex in it, hold up still, because it's not some dodgy CGI from 30 years ago. It's an actual Stan Winston-created giant T-Rex tearing that car to pieces. And, yeah, I think it's got to be number one film for me of all time. I think it holds more significance now in the past few years, and this is, I've been going on about him a lot tonight, this is going back to my kids again, but Luke, although he's named after a Star Wars character, is obsessed with dinosaurs to the point where if he's not a paleontologist later in his life, I've done something wrong. He loves everything to do with dinosaurs. He's 5 and he's seen every single Jurassic Park, Jurassic World film. We were a little bit nervous about showing them to him. We got the versions off of ITV, first of all, because we thought, oh, well, that'll have the bad parts cut out. But then when he watched it on DVD later on, and I fast-forwarded the bits that he hadn't seen, where, like, Dennis Nedry gets eaten by the Dilophosaurus and Gennaro gets eaten off the toilet, he complained and made me rewind it so he could watch it all. So he wasn't bothered about it at all. So, and, like, he now... You were singing the theme tune earlier, Dan. He asks for the album to be put on when he's playing with his dinosaurs. He's like, can I have the Jurassic Park album on? So I have to put it on while he plays dinosaurs, and he walks around the house singing it. So it's got more significance for me now because of that. But even so, you know, going back to when I was 10, it was just a phenomenal film. I think I don't think there'd been anything like it before. You know, I think before this, dinosaurs were very clunky. When you watch things like Journey to the Center of the Earth and The Lost World, you know, like the T-Rex is dragging its tail on the floor. They're almost stop animation. And they're not that impressive. They're like, well, that's clearly not a real dinosaur. Whereas this, you were convinced they were real things, you know. The T-Rex walks with its tail up like you'd expect it to would. You know, the velociraptors were terrifying. even the first ones you see, like the Brachiosaurus at the beginning, the size of it is just so massive. It takes your breath away. You know, obviously it does that to the people in the film as well, but it was just astounding. It was Spielberg's most commercially successful movie that he ever made or has ever made. And that says a lot about it because it is just fantastic. I've even got my Isla Nublar t-shirt on from last Exit to Nowhere. So since I've been part of the research team. It's just permeated my life. What more can you say about it? It's Jurassic Park, you know. It's huge.
And there's quotable lines in this film as well. I mean, I use one quite regularly. Excuse me, which is if a female member of staff at work or my wife or anything does anything, and I'm quite impressed, I just turn around to them and go, "Clever girl."
That doesn't sound creepy at all.
But it is like
depends what they're doing, Sean.
What do you guys get up to when we're not recording? It's just unbelievable. Just the amount of trouble you must get into.
But it is like that, you know, like the life finds a way and all that sort of stuff. You know, it is all people quote that now, and it's a great film.
No, I think when I saw this at the cinema, we sort of roughly knew what to expect because, of course, the trailers have been out and we'd seen things. But I think everybody's reaction to seeing the dinosaurs for the first time were all the same as Sam Neill's depiction of where he takes his glasses off and he fumbles his glasses as he's trying to take them off. He just can't believe what he's seeing. And the camera pans around and you see this, you know, these dinosaurs wandering around and eating off the trees. And it's just incredible. And you believe that they're there. The CGI then is just as good, if not better. In fact, I'd argue it's better then than it is now. I think it was much, much, much better then. And the fact that, yes, they did use animatronics was incredible. The Velociraptor scene where they're chasing them through the kitchen at the end and crashing into things, it's an amazing piece of work. You know, they can see, you know, the reflections and all that. They go for the actual mirror rather than the actual thing itself. It's just what I've written down here, it's a great story as well. The best sort of story you can have. You know, you have monsters, they attack people, and you manage to get away at the end. And what I've written down here is great effects, great story, and Jeff Goldblum. What more could you want in a film?
That's it. And he gets his top off, so perfect. Any excuse. It is. And I think I didn't really know much about Sam Neill either, but he was brilliant in this film. And I know they offered Harrison Ford the role originally and he turned it down. And when he saw the film, he said, yeah, it was Sam was the right part for it. But Sam Neill is just superb in this film, you know, and I'm now a huge fan of his, I think, because of this movie. Hunt for the Wilder People is a superb film. If you guys haven't seen it, you really should. And things, you know, other stuff he's been in, like The Invisible Man, which was before this, I believe. But he's, you know, it's superb, yeah.
I think he's quite underrated. I think he should be in a lot more bigger movies, bigger parts. He's an incredible actor. And this sort of really, you know, sort of thrust him to the fore, you know, put him as the lead. And he absolutely nailed it.
And he's in the new one. So him and Jeff Goldblum and Laura Dern are back for the new one, aren't they? Jurassic World Dominion. I mean, I don't know what it will be like because the last one was a little bit ropey. It seems whenever dinosaurs get on the mainland, the film goes a bit down, you know. So I don't know what this new one will be like, but it'd be nice to have Sam Neill back in it at least. So.
Raptors in Manhattan. That's all.
Yeah.
It's also another link. You've got Sam Jackson, who is Fury, and it goes back to your Marvels, so more links coming back. That's as well. So it just cements all of those links that you've had with all the other films too.
And did you know as well, apparently, this is another link going back, that when Michael Crichton wrote the book, the screenplay was like snapped up within minutes, I think, of him finishing the book almost. But one of the people who was going to bid for it before Spielberg got it was James Cameron. He was interested in directing the film. But Steven Spielberg got there before him. And again, he said it was the right choice because he said his film would have been a lot more like Aliens than Jurassic Park. So, which would have been interesting to see, I think. But yeah,
we would have had Bill Paxton in a Jurassic Park movie. That could have gone quite.
Oh yes, that would have been
good. You son of a bitch, you did it. That's it. Yeah, and it's, you know.
Sean?
They're fine. I don't really care.
Don't wake him up. Don't wake him up. He was having a nice snooze then.
Yeah, no, they're decent movies. I just, whatever. I could take them or leave them. not to rain on your parade or anything. It's a good movie. I like the second one where the doghouse is hanging out of the teeth of the T-Rex. That's probably one of my favorite scenes in all the Jurassic Park movies. But I don't know. They're good. I don't care. They're fine. It's not Star Trek.
It's okay, but it's not Star Trek. Because this is the rider for our podcast, I think, isn't it?
That's it, isn't it?
There you go.
So what you're saying is if the Kelvin movies go back in time to the dinosaur times, then maybe it might be all right.
That sounds horrible.
Oh, fair enough. Okay. No, I tried.
Star Trek meets the land that time forgot.
That's right. It's no 1 million years BC, that's for sure.
I did have, I don't know if you guys know, I did have one more fact about the T-Rex, which was the animatronic one, apparently, because it rained a lot in Hawaii when they were shooting, it would come to life, apparently, in the rain, because the rain would get in, permeate the skin and short out the electronics.
I heard that.
Yeah, they said they'd all be sat there having lunch, and then suddenly they'd hear screaming from further down set, and they'd go down, and the T-Rex would be moving by itself, and it freaks a lot of people out, so... Which is fantastic.
That's got to be better than Jaws. I mean, Jaws was always breaking down. So if the dinosaur is doing better, then obviously it's a
that's it. That's
that,
it.
That makes perfect sense. Excellent. Are there any other tidbits? Anything else about the movie you want to say?
No, I feel a bit deflated by Sean's comments, but what can you say?
I didn't mean to bring you down. It's just it's not one of the ones in my wheelhouse. It's fine. I've got it on Laserdisc too, but
yeah. No, I think it's just for me. It's just the perfect film. I think I'm obviously a huge fan of dinosaurs, of Steven Spielberg, of Sam Neill, Jeff Goldblum is brilliant in it. Lorna Dern, they're all superb. You know. Dennis Nedry, I can't think of the guy's name who plays him now, but he was great in that film. And then I used to love him. He then went on to be in Third Rock from the Sun, which was, you know, a great show of him in. And yeah, Sam Jackson, Sir Richard Attenborough, you know, it goes on and on the list. And I think when the film came out, I had almost every bit of memorabilia or toy that I could get my hands on, you know, and we've still got them today. Like, my mum never threw away any of the toys, so they moved house recently and everything that was in the loft came out. And to my son Luke, that was like the best day ever, because down came all the Jurassic Park toys, the compound, the books, the trading cards, the T-Rexes, everything. And they're all still there, you know. Some of them aren't in pristine condition anymore, but bless her, she kept them all, because that was a hefty collection of Jurassic Park stuff that I had.
Which would be worth a fortune now if you hadn't given it to your son.
It's certainly, certainly true. I know the Jurassic Park compound is going for hundreds of pounds online, and I've got a picture of Luke crawling in the box to get all the stuff out and destroying it in the process. So, so it's now worth peanuts.
So that's that, and your Lego set's completely destroyed.
That's it. I'm going to have to go back to work, aren't I?
That was great. I mean, we're coming up on 2 hours. I know we spent like the first 20 minutes just sort of getting to know each other and everything. So it might be a two episoder again, I think, Paul.
By the time I put some clips in, it'll be a 2 hour, so maybe a two parter.
Nah, just make it one big long one.
Got to leave some suspense, like we did with Lee. I mean, then we could pad it out and leave it a few months before we bring in the second one.
Yeah. There you go. Maybe for future episodes, we'll just ask people about their top five.
I was thinking that.
Well, I have enjoyed listening to you guys. Obviously, I've been here for the last year working from home. I work for Wells Fargo Bank, and obviously, I've been working from home for the last year. So the podcasts have been a great help. You know, I stick them on. Unfortunately, less now the kids are not at school, but when they're not around, they've been great help. So
you're welcome.
That's the service we offer here at the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, right, isn't it?
Indeed.
In every slice. So there we go. Right. Okay. Let's end this thing, shall we? Then. Well, thank you very much, Dave. That is a fantastic list, and we've loved most of the movies, apart from Sean and Paul on a few of them. But you know, we won't bring ourselves down. That's fine. But they are 10 fantastic movies. What are your 10 fantastic movies, listeners? Get back to us, and you can be on this show as well. Maybe we'll trim it down to the top 5. Who knows? Depends on how much you want to listen to these episodes. Who knows? The grease in the box is cold, and we hope you are full to the brim. But you thought about eating this pizza. You thought you could, but you never stopped to think whether you should have eaten the pizza. So join us for more slices of life in the next special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. We've been your deliverers today. Please leave a tip at the door by subscribing for future deliveries, rate and review our service, and we hope you come back for more helpings next time. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr and TikTok by searching for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. If you would like to send us an MP3 file, you can email us on cosmicpizzapodcast@hotmail.com, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.